You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Desroches. And a few days ago, I did a story about an upcoming Aleutic Language Immersion School, or a NEST school, that's going to be opening next month. And I spoke with Michael Bach. And now we have another guest with us today, Mario. We have both Michael and Mario.
Hello.
Good morning.
They said good morning. Why don't you repeat yourself?
Yeah, good morning.
It's afternoon. I just realized that.
It is. Yeah, true statement.
It is 12:30, and we have a half hour to talk about this immersion school, and it has unfolded with a lot of sweat and not tears, or unless they're joyful tears. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how this immersion school came to be?
So it's been... We're, as I like to say, Mari and I are standing on the shoulders of giants. This has been a desire in the community for many years. There's been a lot of different grant-funded opportunities for language learning at different levels. That has included the Master Apprentice Project, which was a grant through the Aleutic Museum, where adult learners were learning from fluent elders. Recently, there was an ANA grant that was done through the Native Village of Afognak. The goal of that was to develop language teachers. Both Mari and I participated in that grant, and through that grant, we were able to develop our fluency by attending different events, whether it was trainings for teaching techniques or what we call hunting techniques, how to find the language that you're missing. And so there's been this kind of series of different grants, initiatives, projects, and of course, those are just two in a long list of many, which I will inevitably forget something, so I'm not going to try and create that comprehensive list. But this is kind of the culmination of those efforts, and it's very exciting to see people who were part of the initial Master Apprentice program saying, "This is so exciting, we wanted this 10 years ago, and here it is today." So in order to answer, how did this come about? It's been many people involved in many different ways in language revitalization. And most recently then, Alicia Drabeck wrote this grant for the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak, and luckily it was funded. And so that's kind of the long short of how this came to be.
It's a hard topic to cover in some regard, because there's a long history of the Aleutic language and how people have learned it and soaked it in, and there's so much to go into. There are religious areas and learning areas and just so much to talk about. Maybe at some point we'll delve into the history.
Sure. As far as personal history, how I learned how to speak Aleutic, it's a less than virtuous story, but it's really because I'm competitive. My best friend would needle me with this one particular Aleutic word, and I couldn't accept that there were sounds that I couldn't pronounce. And so I began to learn how to speak Aleutic and found a whole new community through that.
Mm. All right. And how did you learn Aleutic?
Wait, before we go any further, though, I think you should share, Mario, what that one word is and why it's important to you. Sorry, I got to put you on the spot here because it's a great word.
You're the worst. Okay. So I guess we should explain that this happened at the gym when I was complaining about something, and she said, "Ein Wachak," which, like I could tell from the tone, meant something pretty condescending. Essentially, she was saying, "Poor baby." but that double L sound, that ruined my life for a really long time.
And now it just rolls off your tongue.
It does.
Yeah. Sorry to digress, but I had to share that because I think I love that part of the story. And I think that a lot of people become intimidated by those sounds that are different than English, and therefore think that they're unable to learn those sounds or produce those sounds, when in fact it's just figuring out the tricks, because there's a trick to everything. And now Maria just said it and it just rolled off her tongue. So
yeah, it sounded great.
Thanks,
yeah.
Guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there a name for that sound? Or is it just like one of the sounds that is made?
There's probably a really nerdy linguistic word for it that we learned when we attended the National Breath of Life Archival Institute for Indigenous Languages, but
I can't remember.
We worked with a linguist. She was phenomenal, and she knew all the hows of linguistics, and we just knew how to speak.
Right, yeah.
Could you do that sound again? Can you do it in a word?
A shuck. Ein washuck.
A kluck.
A kluck.
Is that sound being made at the back of your throat, or where is it being made?
You put the tip of your tongue behind your top front teeth and you blow air around it.
Yeah, and that's why it's a double L. This is getting really nerdy really quick here. But that's why it's a double L, is because where you would put your tongue when you're saying a word similar to like or love, that's where your tongue is, and then you're pushing air out through your cheeks to make that sound.
Do you guys know any other languages?
I might
have helped.
Yeah. I've studied other languages, but none of them are Alaska Native languages. Mm-hmm. And so on one hand, it's helpful because I recognize how I learn languages and what works for me, some good, learning tricks. But at the same time, the grammatical structure is very different. And so in that regard, it wasn't very helpful to know another language for my acquisition of Aleutic. But
are there any other sounds in Aleutic that are challenging to reproduce, like for English speakers?
I think some of the nasals probably get a little difficult from time to time. Do you have a sense of that, Michael?
Yeah, I think not necessarily difficult to produce, but to hear. You know, that's one of the most, I think, fascinating parts of learning Aleutic for me as a learner, is being able to train my ears to hear the difference between a Q and a K, for example.
Ooh, or an R and a G.
Or an R and a G. Or there's a great word that I think really exemplifies. Mario's smiling at me because I'm already geeking out about this. That really exemplifies the importance of hearing those different sounds. The word for sea otter is achnak. I'm doing this backwards. The word for sea otter is achnak. And the word for woman is achnak. And so there's a small little amount of air that goes through your nose for sea otter. And at first you're listening and you're like, I cannot hear the difference between those two words. I mean, it took me forever to train my ear to really pick up on that little bit of nuance. And now, probably 4 years later, I can finally hear the difference when I'm speaking with somebody who is proficient in Aleutic. And that's really exciting. You know, that's a really empowering recognition for me to say, oh, wow, that took me so long to figure out, A, how to produce that noise, and now to hear it when somebody is talking is really, really exciting.
Or like theoretically, it's pretty easy to make those sounds, but to make them consistently when they happen in the middle of words, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Preach.
When I was learning Spanish, there are some words I had a difficult time distinguishing between just because of the vowel sounds, but it sounds like in Aleutic that there are some more words that it's not about the vowels, it's about other sounds that are just completely foreign to English speakers. Like you just mentioned the breath through your nose.
Right. And which is really a huge disservice for us English speakers. We don't have those beautiful sounds. You know, I think English in a lot of ways, for me anyway, as I've learned different languages, I've come to recognize how really our heads and our throats are these beautiful instruments, you know, and other languages are really good at drawing from those skills and drawing from those sounds to create meaning. And in English, we just don't have that. We have other great things, you know, about English English as our first language. We're really fortunate to have that. But I always think, man, languages like Aleutic really have some beautiful sounds. And to be able to listen to old recordings of stories or to listen to conversation is really a privilege, because those are sounds that we don't hear in our day-to-day lives anymore, or many of us don't.
Or sometimes we get lazy. One of the examples that we've heard are the difference between the name Mary, the concept of to marry somebody, or when things are merry and bright, as they tend to be this time of year. And I don't pronounce those any differently, but I know some East Coasters, and you can definitely tell the difference.
Yeah, I've had debates at my dinner table in college. A bunch of us say Mary and Mary and all those things differently. Mm-hmm. I think I just did that.
Yeah.
So maybe it is an East Coast thing. Mary versus Mary.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, there's a distinction there for me.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That is a good example of one of the difficult words to tell. Well, in context, I think we would get what
Absolutely.
We're talking about there. But another comparison as far as language goes is tones in Mandarin. When I took like a really short class in Mandarin, and the tones were so challenging. So that's something that you would have to master. That how long did it take you to master that sound production and elutic?
She's calling us masters right now. I like that.
To me.
Wow, I'm a master. I'm just teasing, because I don't think like that's something that you'll always have, you know. Learning a second or a third or any language, you're a constant learner. I mean, there's still times I'm reading books or whatever and I think, wow, I've never seen that word used in that context, or I don't know that word. And so that's really what's fun about language learning in my mind, is you're never a master.
I still think of myself, and I'm sure you do too, Michael, as a language learner.
Yeah.
Some people call us elutic speakers, but that feels a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that kind of falls into the whole scale of fluent, conversational, and when you're the speaker of a language that's not as widely spoken as some of the, like, Spanish or English or something like that, you quickly probably become more in the top tier than some others. You're going to probably be a master to me, because I would never be able to tell the difference between those two words if you had not pointed out the differences between them. Mm-hmm. So it's fitting that you should be part of the school, because you're helping other people.
And that's what's really exciting about this Language Nest opportunity, whereas Maria just articulated, and I did jokingly, we're not masters. We're not fluent elutic speakers. And so, you know, it's probably a question that a lot of people have on their minds. Well, how then are you going to run an immersion style language nest? What does that look like if you're not a fluent speaker? And it's exciting for us to be able to have fluent elders to work with and to focus our learning a little bit more to fill in those domains where we don't have really fleshed out language, or where we're not comfortable with the language yet, because we may have been exposed to it, but we don't use it on a daily basis. And so not only is the Language Nest really exciting from an educational perspective for the young people who will be participating, but it's also exciting for the speakers that we do have in our community to give them space to use their language by the end of the project on a daily basis. For learners like ourselves to continue to hone those skills and have somebody in the classroom with us who is able to correct us, make sure that our intonation and our cadence is appropriate, make sure that we're not being too influenced by our first language. Inevitably, when you're learning a second language, there's many influences. You know, you think primarily in your first language, and maybe your sentence structure is a little bit off, or your intonation is a little bit goofy or laughable. And so the Language Nest is not only a really great opportunity for young ones, but also speakers of all different ages who are able to participate and to refine those skills and to make a community where we can have a safe learning environment and bring elutic back into the daily usage that it needs to be.
And I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about how the teachers and the elders will share responsibility and how the schedule will look on a daily basis. Or vaguely how it might look.
Well, I guess it's important to note that, you know, our elders will have an honored role in our school. So really all classroom management and day-to-day function rests solely on Michael and I. And our elders are there really to enjoy being around the kids, and there for our benefit and for the kids' benefit. We don't have any expectations that they will teach any portions of it. They're there to keep us in line.
Yeah. Yeah. And regarding the schedule, it's right now we've been doing classroom planning in preparation. As you know, we open our doors towards the end of January on the 24th. And on one hand, that seems really far away, but with the holidays, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, that's right at our doorstep. And we have a rough schedule, and we, you know, every day we're kind of planning on how do we pack that schedule with fun activities, songs, crafts. How do we fill that space in a way that will be really enriching for young people? And it's going to look similar to most preschools, you know, where there's, you come in, there's a big circle time, we sit around, we talk about what the weather's like outside, what day of the week is it, what month are we in? That sort of kind of basic awareness of your daily life, and then move into playtime where there's going to be different centers. We've started to build little play areas that kids can have choice to go play in our little fake kitchen, or with, you know, we have boxes with rice where they can pour cups of rice into things, and, you know, just your regular preschool scenario. And so we're going to move through the day where it's circle time, center discovery time, free play time, outdoor time, snack time, small group time, going through the regular process. So that's kind of what the schedule's going to look like. And like Maria said, we're not expecting the elders to be in charge of those activities, because that's a lot to ask. But for them to be there to observe and to help us if we do have any questions, and to participate where they feel comfortable.
Right. And how many students will there be?
We'd ideally like 10. The Nest will be open to children ages 3 to 5, without an adult if they're potty trained. And then children under 3 or who haven't potty trained yet are welcome to attend with a caregiver that stays with them. And I think that we're looking for, you know, ideally 10 students that Michael and I have charge of.
And you were mentioning one of the other days we spoke, Michael, that this program will involve high participation with the parents too.
Right. Like we had talked about a couple days back, it's important for families who are considering enrolling their little ones to recognize that you can't send your child to an environment where they're speaking, listening, interacting in a different language, and just kind of let them hang out there alone. And so part of our goal is to invite families to not only send their kids to a language nest where they can learn Aleutic, but also to welcome that Aleutic into their home. And one way that we're going to support that is through Family Language Night. And Kodiak Public Library has been so kind to offer some space so that we can get together on Wednesday nights. And our goal right now, and it depends upon who the families are and if people are keen on this idea, but we would like to maybe everybody bring an ingredient, make soup together, hang out as a community of language learners, and maybe create one environment in their home where people become very confident and proficient in using their Aleutic. And so that could just be making a meal. If you bring pieces of the language into your home in that way, that will help support the kids' language acquisition, and also the adults, the caregivers, the siblings, the aunts, the uncles, the grandmas and grandpas, whoever lives in the household with them, that will also support their language acquisition. And so in no way are we expecting parents to become fluent in Aleutic. That's an unrealistic expectation for them. But we do expect them to attend and to be open-minded to learning new words and bringing them into their home in new creative ways.
Do you have any idea how easy it might be for a child to pick up Aleutic?
That's a great question.
Kids are sponges. Any language.
Kids are sponges. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we're doing is we're creating a very conscious contextual environment for them to learn Alutiiq, much as, you know, you have a contextual environment for learning your first language.
Mm-hmm. And so this is also where I can geek out a little bit. I get really excited about second language acquisition and what that means, not only from a learner perspective, but also from a cognitive perspective. And there's been lots of research on how kids, A, acquire their first language. You know, what does that look like? We don't really understand how a kid can come out and just have no language and suddenly become fluent speakers and participants in society when nobody is ever giving them the instructions for how to use this complex communication system. And research shows that kids who are involved in multilingual or bilingual communities or households have a stronger ability to do basic skills like problem solving, even something so simple as learning a second language in a school environment supports their home language because kids are figuring out how different grammar structures work. They're able to hypothesize how something so simple as pluralization works. You know, oftentimes we take these grammar skills for granted because we all share the same language. But for a little one who's maybe learning Alutiiq, pluralization is different in Alutiiq. And so they would figure that out through a contextualized environment where they're able to see, oh, one is said this way, two items are said this way, and three or more items are said that way. And creating those hypotheses, creating those observations at a really young age only will set up kids for greater cognitive capacity as they grow older. And so it's really exciting from an academic perspective. You know, I've done a lot of research in the literature about, well, what does this say for kids? And it just sets them up for success. It sets them up to be more successful in school, not only with language arts, but also those problem-solving skills are critical when you're looking at math and science. How do you look at a problem and figure it out? The more tools that we give young people in our community to problem solve, the more equipped they're going to be to answer those really complex questions the further they go in their education. And so I think a lot of people are concerned about, well, what does this look like for my kid?
Will they be kindergarten ready?
Right. Will they be prepared to go into school? Of course they'll be prepared. Kids are wildly intelligent. I think we oftentimes underestimate how skilled they are, you know, and it's really magical how the brain is so plastic at that age. And we forget that because now we don't learn things that easily as adults, you know. I'm always very jealous of young people and how they just pick things up, you know, at the snap of a finger. And we lose that as adults. And so taking off our adult hats and saying, we figured it out as a kid. What makes us think that our kids are going to be any less capable? I think that's a better question as opposed to, are they really going to be prepared? Of course they'll be prepared. It's just, what skills do they have in their toolbox? They might be a little bit different, but there's still a skill set that they can bring into a classroom and be successful.
Right. So we have 5 more minutes. Can you speak a little bit more about how the immersion school ties into the bigger projects involving Alutiiq? Because you guys got a grant recently that funds more things than the immersion school?
Yes. So the preschool is one component of this. This grant is a 5-year grant that was funded through the Administration for Native Americans. And the overarching theme of this grant is what's called an education continuum. So what that means in layperson terms is bringing access to learning the Alutiiq language to all age groups. The preschool focus at a Language Nest, I think, is really romantic and really exciting because in many ways they're the most promising community. They're the most promising aspect of our community. But through events like the Family Language Night, adults will have access to learn some language. We're going to continue to be doing outreach in the high school through the Alutiiq Language High School class, along with middle school tutorial events, which will be starting up, I believe, next semester. And so there's our goal is to impact age groups throughout their lives, not only just preschools, but also adults who have little ones, high schoolers, middle schoolers, and in elementary schools as well.
Okay.
We're currently very good at taking care of Aleutic language learning at the high school and college level, but we've been missing those other key pieces.
Right. And if someone is interested in joining, how do they sign up and register?
Great
for the
question.
Immersion school.
Yeah. So there's always more information on Shunack Tribe's website. You can go to shunack.org. And underneath the education tab at the top of the page, there will be a drop-down menu. And one of those options is Tamamdalitugut, which is the name of this project, meaning we are all learning. You can also find us on Facebook by searching Tamamdalitugut, which most people can't spell. And that's okay because it's a hard couple of words to spell. Or you can always call Mari and I at our office. Our phone number is 512-5995, and we can answer any questions and send information.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.